This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehisu Heap in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's a pretext. They've just used it as an excuse to clamp down and violate rights, particularly now in this case on the opposition. Otherwise, we would see, you know, a balance of the implementation of those regulations. We're not seeing arrests at NRM processions.
That was Human Rights Watch Africa researcher Oriam Nyako on the different treatment for campaign crowds for the ruling party as well as the opposition. Details coming up also. There is fear that Ethiopia's internal conflict in the Tigray region could spread to other parts of the country. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Ugandan opposition leader and presidential candidate Bobi Wine has been released on bail but charged with violating COVID-19 guidelines for holding mass rallies. Wine's arrest at the rally yesterday led to protests by his supporters and clashes with security forces that killed at least 37 people. Human Rights Watch says Ugandan authorities have used COVID-19 as a pretext to clamp down on opposition parties and media ahead of January's election. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
The Ugandan court charged Robert Chagurani, known by his stage name Bobi Wine, with actions likely to spread COVID-19 for holding mass rallies. The Iganga District Court ordered his release until the case resumes in December. The Secretary General of Wine's National Unity Platform Party, David Rubongoya, watched the proceedings.
Bobi has been released on bail, and we are here at the court waiting for him to leave the court and probably head home. There's a lot of security deployment. We don't know what will happen, but he's free.
Police arrested Wine Wednesday while he was campaigning in eastern Uganda for January's presidential election. His arrest sparked protests by supporters across the country, leading to hundreds of arrests and a rising death toll in clashes with security. Uganda police pathologist Moses Wierhanga says most of the dead had gunshot wounds.
We had cases of traumatic injuries, accidents, we had the firearm injuries. As of today, total number is 37. 4 female, 33 male.
Uganda's security minister and a police spokesman say the protesters were violent, targeted government supporters and were believed to be armed. Critics note Ugandan police and plain-clothed security were quick to use live ammunition against the protesters. Human Rights Watch said Friday that Wine's arrest shows Ugandan authorities are using COVID-19 as an excuse to clamp down on the opposition ahead of January's election. Human Rights Watch Africa researcher Oriam Nyoko says the ruling National Resistance Movement, NRM party's campaigns, also attract large crowds, which security forces have allowed.
It's a pretext. They've just used it as an excuse to clamp down and violate rights, particularly now in this case on the opposition. Otherwise, we would see, you know, a balance of the implementation of those regulations. We're not seeing arrests at NRM processions.
At a campaign rally Thursday, President Yoweri Museveni said the protesters are being used by outsiders who are against Uganda's stability and independence. Museveni, who has been in power for 34 years, did not elaborate and offered no evidence. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Cameroon says at least 15,000 people have been made homeless or displaced by floodwaters along its northern border with Chad. Government and aid groups are on the border to help those in need, but flood victims say food and medicine are scarce. Mokedwin Kinzaka reports from Koseri, Cameroon.
The number of homeless and displaced is growing from flooding on the border between northern Cameroon and neighboring Chad. Cameroon authorities say heavy rains that began in September and worsened this week forced the Logon River to burst its banks. In the town of Kuseri, farmer Ali Kadil says on Friday morning his house and 15 others were destroyed by flood waters.
ce matin à 5h, Logon.
He says at about 5 o'clock in the morning, the Logon River on the border with Chad burst its banks and swept away their homes. Kadir says he is grateful to God for saving the lives of his two wives and four children. But he says his family is hungry and his children no longer have a means to go to school. Cameroon's far north region authorities say several hundred homes and farms have been destroyed since Wednesday. No casualties have been reported, but many people are homeless. 35-year-old fisherman Omar Aziz is spokesman for the flood victims. He says they are urgently waiting for food and medical help. Aziz says waters from the Logon and Shari rivers that flow past Kuseri have swept away all the sandbags used to try to stop further flood damage in their village. He says flood waters have swept away 70% of houses along the banks of the River Logon, both in Cameroon and Chad. It was not possible to independently verify how many houses were destroyed in Chad. But Chad public broadcaster Tele Chad reported their government sent food aid to victims. Kuseri Mayor Eseni Dakadre says the city council is providing food and medical aid on the Cameroon side.
Face à cette situation, nous avons sensibilisé les populations.
He says a lot of farmers from areas that are now dry because of the advancing desert settled along the river to grow and sell crops in Cameroon and Chad. Dakar says the council intends to relocate people from risky areas along the river to safer places. Cameroon authorities say the International Red Cross and United Nations are also providing aid. Seasonal rains from surrounding hills and nearby Lake Chad often cause flooding in the Logon and Shari rivers. The worst floods in northern Cameroon in 2012 claimed 60 lives after more than a month of heavy rains. Cameroon authorities say flooding last year left 100,000 people homeless on both sides of the border. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kuseri, Cameroon.
The French news agency AFP says Tigray forces have fired rockets at a neighboring state, heightening fears that Ethiopia's internal conflict could spread to other parts of the country. Meanwhile, the Associated Press quoted a university official report as saying, air attacks by Ethiopia's military struck a school in Tigray's capital, causing major damage. The government had no immediate comment on the report. With the region's communications cut off, it is difficult to verify claims from both sides. Alarmed by the potential for disaster in Ethiopia and beyond, AP reports that 17 U.S. senators have urged Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to engage Ethiopia's prime minister to push for a ceasefire. Timor Nash, the U.S. Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, expressed concern about reported attacks in airports in Bahardar and Gondar in the Amhara region and the November 14th attack in Eritrea. He said these unacceptable attacks make the situation more dangerous. We remain deeply concerned over reports that civilians have been purposely targeted and attacked. He also strongly urged an immediate de-escalation of tensions, a cessation of hostilities, and a return to peace. United Nations aid agencies fear the growing exodus of Ethiopian refugees into Sudan from the Tigray region could reach 200,000 in the coming months. The conflict in Ethiopia is sparking a lot of discussion among the country's diaspora, and those who share their views online have noticed they often get strong pushback from people who hold opposing opinions. In some cases, the division is ruining friendship. Marta van der Wolf reports from London.
When the fighting started between the Ethiopian army and forces in the northern Ethiopian region of Tigray, London-based Mela Tesfai was worried for her family stuck in Tigray. She started sharing her opinion about the conflict on her social media accounts. Tesfai said people from the British Ethiopian diaspora community would send her messages. They said her online posts offended them, as she does not support the attack on the Tigray region. Tesfai says she was taken back by the response from some people she had considered to be friends.
It's a like real-life situation that affects me and my family. So a lot of those people that were pushing for the war to go ahead, a lot of them I've either deleted or, you know, unfriended on a lot of my social media platform. I'm becoming very withdrawn from the people that I usually used to associate myself with and stuff like that. So I feel like it's having a domino effect on me without even realizing it.
Despite the backlash, Tesfai hasn't stopped posting and sharing online. More than 2.5 million Ethiopians live abroad. Besides sending home billions of dollars in remittances, the diaspora has for years been actively involved in organizing and leading online campaigns. Sarai Delnisau considers herself an active member of the Ethiopian diaspora community in Britain, but the intensity of the debates on social media has left her much more careful about what she shares online.
Sometimes I post these things and straight away in my inbox I'm getting messages and it's like, well, actually, you shouldn't really say this, you shouldn't say that. And it's like, well, with posts that I have put up personally, I've had people contact me with, you know, positive messages and negative. So it's been a 50-50.
People posting messages that support Tigray are often seen by others as denying the dominant role the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, played in Ethiopian politics for many years, while opposition to the TPLF is often seen as endorsing the army's offensive. Azad Madebo is a PhD candidate at the University of Southern California focusing on Ethiopian diaspora and media. Madebo says the diaspora can bring awareness to problems, but that these social media campaigns often rely on simplified narratives misrepresenting complex realities.
What we find online is more and more division and politicization of ethnic identities. The diaspora has to find a way out of the quagmire of ethnic politics to help create a country that is reflective of our collective identities, our struggles, and our hopes. Otherwise, the diaspora's current social media engagement will just help incite and justify further trauma.
Tensions between the central government and the northern region escalated 2 weeks ago after forces from the TPLF attacked an army base in what it called an act of self-defense. Neighboring countries are now also involved after the TPLF fired missiles on Eritrea's capital city, Asmara. More than 20,000 people have fled to Sudan seeking safety. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
Zimbabwean journalist and government critic Hopewell Chinono was freed on bail today, 2 weeks after he was arrested on charges of obstructing justice. The arrests of Chinono and dozens of activists in the last 4 months have led to accusations that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government is persecuting opponents, a charge that authorities deny. Chinono is one of Zimbabwe's most prominent critics of Mnangagwa's administration, accusing it of corruption and human rights abuses. Western embassies, journalist associations, and other sympathizers say Chinono is being targeted for using Twitter to expose government graft. The U.S. Embassy in Harare on Friday said it would continue to closely monitor the case. Zimbabwe government has been in lengthy talks with its civil servants while nurses and teachers have been on strike. They say their pay is so small they cannot report for duty. But that's changing for some teachers. Reporter Kuzai Zenawashi has the details from Harare.
Government has agreed to a 41% salary increase with the Apex Council, which represents civil servants at the salary negotiations. Cecilia Alexander, head of the Apex Council, says the agreement is a compromise.
Negotiations is give and take. And sometimes you push until you get to a point, let's take what is there for now, whilst we keep on pushing. What really made us into signing the agreement is the fact that the budget are already exhausted. And also the bonus
Zimbabwe's economy has been sinking rapidly over the past few years, with triple-digit inflation and shortages of basic goods such as fuel, food and medicines. The government's funds also are running out. Raymond Majongwe is the Secretary General of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He says teachers failed to hold a united front in the negotiations and blamed in part the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, or ZIMTA.
The tragedy we now have is we have serious challenges within our command structure because of the nature of what ZIMTA did. ZIMTA took a decision and called their members back to work. They moved away from the United Front where all teacher unions were involved.
Majongwe says, despite the divisions, the issues affecting teachers remain the same, and teachers are genuinely unable to report for duty. And he says the Apex Council did not protect the teachers' interests in the negotiations. Alexander, however, says the agreement ensures their members go home with something this year and that talks do not spill over to the coming year. To sweeten the deal, Alexander says government will not only pay bonus on gross salaries but also include allowances and the reviewed salary increase. Other union negotiators have said the government's threat to withhold annual bonuses for teachers encouraged them to reach a deal. Paul Mavima, the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare, defended the government's position on bonuses.
Why should someone who is not going to work be paid a bonus? What is the meaning of a bonus? The government has said that those who don't work don't get paid. So if teachers decide not to go to work, one, they will not be paid a monthly salary. Secondly, a bonus is a thank you for a job well done. So what's the point of paying a bonus to someone who is not reporting to work?
However, Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe President Obed Masaraure says that threat is pointless.
We have noted the threats of salary cessations, bonus withdrawals, among others. But those threats will not capacitate us. Like threatening to strangle a dead body. Teachers have not been earning anything of much value. And the threats to withdraw our already insignificant salaries will not move anyone.
He adds the union will start mobilizing for strikes to pressure the government to meet their demands to be paid in US dollars. The government, however, has expressed concern that a sharp increase in civil servant salaries could add to the country's soaring inflation. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
IFI is a love story, the movie's producer says. Except one thing makes it stand out in Nollywood, Africa's top cinematic market. It's a tale of love between two Nigerian women. The fact delayed the controversial film's release, leading to a battle with the nation's censorship board and forcing its makers to decide to drop it on internet platforms instead of in cinemas. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to the producer and to African LGBTQ activists ahead of the film's December 10th launch. She reports from Johannesburg.
Ife, says the film's producer, is a love story, pure and simple. The title is taken from the word for love in the Yoruba language of Nigeria. But this story between two women, in a society where homosexuality is largely shunned and where same-sex marriage is illegal, is a little more complicated. It's the first such cinematic release from a nation that leads the continent's film industry. Nigeria's censorship board threatened to go after the filmmakers for promoting homosexuality in an industry that, despite its huge output, is largely conservative in its themes. That has led the filmmakers to not push for local release. Instead, they plan to drop it online on December 10th. Viewers can access it, for a fee, on the Nigerian LGBT-centered website, ehtvnetwork.com, says producer Pamela Adye.
Filmmakers here, mainstream filmmakers, usually shy away from telling stories that center LGBT people. And even when those stories are told, they are told from a very negative point of view. And lesbians and gay people are portrayed usually as people to be feared, people who should be imprisoned, people who should be killed, people who deserve no rights in the Nigerian society.
More than 30 African countries criminalize non-heterosexual relationships, and people in many others hold negative views about same-sex relationships. In 2018, Kenya's first lesbian feature film, Rafiki, was banned at home, despite the fact that it was the nation's first movie to premiere at the prestigious Cannes Film Festival. So, who should watch this film? U.S.-based writer and filmmaker Noni Salma, who's Nigerian and transgender, said the answer is simple. Everybody.
It's a big deal for queer people, for lesbian women, for people who are not lesbian women who, you know, just want to watch stuff that's outside, you know, the mainstream narrative, or even people who might be uncomfortable. Sometimes you need to step outside of your comfort zone to see stories from other communities. I think that having films like Ife is very important for that reason.
It's also a story of pain, says Adie, one that many members of the community can relate to.
You know, when I came out of the closet, you know, I was pretty much rejected by my whole family, you know, especially my mom, who at some point asked me to move out of our family house, you know, and later on she asked me to change my family name, you know, so as not to bring shame onto the family name. And so, you know, my story, my experience is really not unique. It's very common here in Nigeria.
The same holds true in South Africa, which was the first African nation to decriminalize homosexuality and allow gay marriage. Activist and storyteller Welcome Lashiva says even here, lesbians are overlooked and subjected to horrible treatment.
A lot still needs to be done in terms of representing women, in representing lesbians and getting their stories and their voices out there. The story of lesbian women is no different from the story of women in general in relation to men, because we live in a deeply sexist society, a deeply patriarchal society, that even within the LGBTI movement, we are seeing that the representation is still not meshed across, you know, the different letters or subgroups of the community.
So is Africa ready for this film? Adie will leave it to her characters, Ife and Adora, to answer that. The film will drop on December 10th, Human Rights Day. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Bokvidia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.